when I put in to do this presentation, we were still the Australian Flexible Learning Framework, and at some point, God knows when, we've now all moved across to the National VET e-learning strategy, even though it doesn't really start until the 1st of January 2012. So it gets a bit confusing for us, and we're working on it for a daily basis. So if you haven't come across the Australian Flexible Learning Framework before, or the National VET e-learning strategy, it's the National VET e-learning strategy. And part of that is around learner pathways. So one component of it is around learner pathways. So that's what the discussion's going to be today. What I thought I'd do is actually start off with a question and get you to speak with the people around you about, well, what is a learner pathway? And it'll be interesting for me to find out from you. So I'll give you 2 or 3 minutes to discuss, well, what do you consider a learner pathway to be? And then we'll come back and share them. Okay, if you just want to just wind up what you're speaking about at the moment. Okay, so just because of the short time span, and what we'll do, hopefully at the end there'll still be time, and there's time to talk about some of the strategies we might use around learner pathways. But I'm just interested then in what do you consider a learner pathway? So from each of your groups, what did you consider, and you might have two considerations, or three if you were in groups. So just from the group, what did you consider a learner pathway? Anybody like to go first?
Oh, yep. The journey that a learner might take to get from one place to another, so they learn along the way, and there may be things that junctures they come to that make decisions when they can go one way to another. So I guess, yeah.
Okay.
It's a pathway that's not determined necessarily always by the learner, totally, but they go up and make choices and decisions around which path they take.
Very
sexy.
Yes, and I think I've just remembered this podcasting thing is great if you're clever and you remember that there's other components to it, I think. So who'd like to go next? So Beth was talking about it being a journey from A to B, and along that way you've got learning happening and there might be decisions made, but perhaps not all those decisions are made by the learner. Is that a reasonable summary?
I see the learning. With Narelle, we were discussing the learning has formal and informal pathways that recognise that we are multi-intelligences, and, you know, sometimes we'll have a bent towards a particular subject area, and, you know, that's a key to untapping or tapping into what you're good at.
Okay. Anybody else got to contribute to that, the group? Anything you'd like to add or have us?
Quite similar, but probably just that it's building and it's increasing in complexity or in layers.
That's an interesting one. And the group at the front, do you want to share what you thought? Or add to the little definition we're building up here?
Only that I would focus on, it's on a learner. I didn't see it as learning, which would probably be more generic, but it's learner. So it's really requires a fair depth of knowledge about the learner and the skills that they had and their particular needs, etc., and their pathway.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah, I think the thing that you stressed was the individuality of it, which I really like, because, you know, you can have two outcomes or people going for the same outcome, but they get there in a totally different way.
Okay, so individualised and customised. All right, and they're some of the words we've been hearing today, isn't it, about personalised and customised. Oh, sorry, thank you.
I think the learning has to adapt.
It's a bit, remember the old CB radios, those of us can remember that, you know, like, hang on, you know, over.
The pathway also has pitfalls, and so the pathway, if you were, say, on your way to a formal learning, hence a qualification, there might be a hiccup in the financial support of that, and you can't afford to continue going on that pathway. You've got to go get a job, or, you know, you have a child and something happens and you can't get back into your studies or get back to work to be supported in some other way, or you take a different bent. You know, I mean, I've had 5 or 6 career changes, all very different, and each one of them had learning. But yeah,
my theory is, and I've got it on Skype, life's one big learning journey, yeah. You know, but take some control of the ride. you know, that's my theory and that's my philosophy about education. Like, how do we help people take control of some of that ride? But that's a whole, probably a whole other kind of discussion. So just to formalise it, this is, and it's probably out of date because, well, it is out of date because there's no graduate certificates in the vocational sector space there. But it gives you a quick visual where we kind of think this is what happens, right? Well, primary school, yep, secondary school. Yeah, well, let's hope we get to the upper secondary, and if we don't, there are some pathways out. And it seems like we're moving up. And it seems like it's quite linear. It seems quite simple. Well, I think from just our quick discussion there, it's kind of not very simple. Some of the background stuff that feeds into our work is the percentage of people who have different kinds of levels of qualifications. So our government is very focused on qualifications. The vet sector is helping them a bit, talking about skill sets, but this is talking about post-school. So the top one's about post-school, and then we've got advanced diplomas, diplomas in the middle, and then the bachelor or higher ed degrees. But most of them are going on an upward trend, and we've actually been set some pretty interesting targets. So for the vet sector, I'm assuming everybody's working in and around something to do with vocational education, so you might not necessarily be an RTO, but if you are an RTO, your state government or territory has signed you up for this pact that you will try and halve the proportion of Australians who don't have at least a Cert 3 or above, and that you're going to try and double the number of people who have a diploma or advanced diploma by 2020. So if you hear this rhetoric in your organisation, like, you know, we need learners with higher qualifications, this is because it's been brought down on your institution, especially if you're a public institution, to be doing this. For the higher ed, the target comes out of the Bradley Review that says we want 40% or 4 out of 10 people aged between 25 and 34, I say working age Australians, but let's say that's a small group there, to have a bachelor degree or higher, and currently that's 29, and this is by 2020. So there's some pretty, there's a bit of pressure on people in education. There's some good reasons why we want this to keep going up without opening up too widely as a discussion because we'll run out of time. Any suggestions why we want that to go up? Why do we want that graph to be moving up, that people have higher qualifications and there's more people with higher qualifications?
For our skills base.
So yes, we'll have skills, the skills gaps perhaps will be filled. Why is the government's interested in that? Why else might the government be interested in it?
And also to economic rationalism comes into it because you want to get people off New Start and welfare and et cetera, et cetera.
That strategy does nothing towards shifting the labour market.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
No,
but Alison did ask what was the government reasons. Now, economic theorists will tell you that's a whole lot of hogwash, right. However...
So, John, thank goodness John Buchanan's not in here at this point in time. But the theory is the higher qualification, or some of the reality is higher qualification, higher pay scale, more taxes, higher qualification, better educated, usually better health approach, better social justice, better mental health. So there's lots of cost savings for the government, and that's why they publicly fund a lot of education in adult education. So, yes.
That's provided a high percentage.
Thank you.
That would only make sense if a high proportion of those people would become entrepreneurs.
Well, as I said, we probably don't want to get too far. But I mean, if we've got skills gaps, I mean, some industries who are not necessarily just all entrepreneurs, if they're not filling the skills gap, there is loss of productivity. So there's that kind of rationalism as well. But so I'll need to remember to either invite John Buchanan or not get so political in there. But there are some political agendas as to why we're doing this. And if you're like me and you're a perpetual optimist, a lot of social justice agendas as well, about making people's lives better. But as Roger Harrison Co. has recognised, that those beautiful pathways that we're led to believe we go on, that journey, that nice linear straight up the pathway one, is actually more like crazy paving. Yeah. So who's had a degree and then had to get the cert for in TAE? Right? right? So we've all gone, right, and there's a lot of people in nursing might have gone down that path, social workers might have gone down that path. There are probably quite a number of occupations where they've had a bachelor or higher, and then to come to vet, they have to come back. I had a teaching degree, and I still needed that cert for. So it's a crazy paving. It's not a straightforward path. So for a project I've been looking after, the e-portfolio project, one of the mandates was around learner transitions. You know, how does an e-portfolio support learner transitions? So as part of some study I was doing, I did a literature review around learning pathways or learner pathways, and this is what I kept seeing in the literature. You need streamlined pathways. You know, you need to make it easy for people to get from A to B, and not so many potholes there, that when they get from A and they're in B, that they're supported when they're in there, and that they need to be given easy ways of gaining credit, transfer, or articulation or recognition of prior learning. And that makes learner pathways easier. It's not perfect, but easier.
I think we don't do the credit recognition justice at all. And I am just on a close experience with going into higher education, the institutes, the universities, they really don't like to embrace the RPL. They really hate it, you know.
And so this is where some of the work that the National Vet E-Learning Strategy wants to get involved in. So that leads in nicely. So this National Vet E-Learning Strategy, Jay spoke briefly about this morning, and it's been mentioned throughout. It's coupled around three main goals. The big theme that happened in the middle of the day, that, you know, that high-speed bandwidth that's supposed to make everybody's life much better. I'm hoping it does, but, you know, the reality is, as Dean showed us, you know, they're still humans dealing with technology. They're still going to be the same issues. So it's not going to be fabulous all the way.
But does that mean it's vet only, or is there still two populations that are two educational pathways? One is vet and one is higher ed.
Well, I'll show you that in a moment.
Or are we going to be mingling?
What happens is between the school sector and the higher ed sector, vet's really the poor cousin, basically. They love us because we're we're driven by the industry, so it's a bit like those shareholders. You know, industry says, like this faceless industry says you have to do this. But also we've got the national system, so we're transferable across there. The states and territories kind of agree, which isn't common across Australia. But we get the least amount of funding to do the most amount of stuff. So we're the poor cousins. So that when they've positioned themselves as the National Vet E-Learning Strategy, they've done that very particularly because you just get sucked up into higher ed. I mean, the funding we get for this whole thing that we do, one institution in higher ed would get just for their institution. The school sector, what do they get? $2.7 billion for the digital education revolution. Can anybody hear that for vet? No, there's a few crickets. So it is. This one has to, if you're going to be involved in any way, you have to demonstrate how you're meeting the vocational education and training aspect of it. And so the National Broadband Network was one of those. Workforce development, so we've just talked about the importance of that. And then the social justice or the access and participation. And you'll see down there that one component of it they're now calling learner pathways. So this is amalgamation of an old project out of the Australian Flexible Learning Framework together with a brand newie for the vocational education e-learning strategy, whether it's the framework or the strategy. And it's one strategic objective, but it's actually three components, and it really confuses people sometimes in terms of the funding we've got available as to, well, do I have to do an e-portfolio to do the last one? But basically is e-portfolio tools, so how you might use personal online learning spaces or storage spaces to manage learning evidence, how you might actually get data out of a student management system as an electronic learner record, a trusted transcript, e-transcript or e-parchment, and how might you use e-learning programs, not just e-portfolios, but one of them, it could be an e-portfolio, to help people get to these higher qualifications that we've been asked to do as mandates. So if I just quickly break them up, I'm not going to force you to go through there. The first bit is looking at exemplar trials At this point in time, they're targeted. We're going to institutions and saying, look, we know you're kind of mature in this area around e-portfolios, and we want to either do one or both of these things with you. We want to start to collect some longitudinal data that says that this is an effective way of collecting evidence about a learner, and what is the learner doing with that evidence post the vet sector. And the other is we can see you're actually starting to do this quite well in a small part of your organisation. How do you actually expand it? And we'll give you a little bit of money to work that out, and then we can help other people do that. So that's yet to come, yet to see light of day. This one is very technical based. It's very much about trying to draw out information out of the learning management system, sorry, the student management systems, or the student result system, whatever it is that you're putting the results in your institution or in your organisation. And the research we found is these third parties over on the right-hand side here, your employers, your industry licensing boards, your unions and so forth, they think this is a great idea, having the electronic data coming out about individuals that they can get electronically, because it's a lot faster than me taking my parchment, going, photocopying my parchment, going to the Justice of the Peace, the Justice of the Peace signs, and then I mail it to somebody. So they can see some clear business benefits in doing that. But what they did tell us is, but we don't want this little beastie here, the learner, having actual control over that, because we don't trust the learner. Because you know that 0.111% of the learner that's not trusting, so that means everybody's not trusting. But they would see it that if you had some sort of learner record system that could feed into an e-portfolio system that was trusted, it would work really well. Who's sort of the unique student identifier for the vocational sector? Okay, so they're talking about doing that. They're talking about giving everybody a unique identifier that allow them to aggregate results kind of in a national qualification register that then that could be attached to somebody's e-portfolio. So it's like an e-transcript or an e-parchment. And that's a whole, again, another presentation about how that happens, what does it look like and so forth. Those decisions haven't been made.
Is this also driven by the... I don't know, I'm thinking like the devil's advocate.
Sure.
Trying to stop fraud.
Yes.
Qualification fraud.
Yes.
So we've got a register account.
Yes. So there's a number of drivers, but for occupational licensing bodies and high risk areas, yeah, that would save a lot of their pain points. You know, some parchments look quite professional; they have a little gold emblem,
brilliant.
And some of them look like they've just been printed off a publisher. I don't know why I'm holding that up.
Yeah, they're the real ones.
Right. Yeah. So. So there's that's an issue. But also you can imagine streamlining from the learner's perspective if they're going through this sort of crazy paying learning pathway, don't really get all this vet speak, and that you sort of open up something and go, oh, you've done a little bit of that and a little bit of that. In fact, if you only did a little bit of that, you've got a qual.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So there's some advantages for the RTOs.
The vet is not gathering qualification.
At this stage, the USI, the Unique Student Identifiers, for plan for the vet sector because we're national, but with the rollout to higher ed and school sector, it's yet to be seen. You know, we've got it. It got approved by Scotese, which was McTeague. So it got at the minister level. It was approved last week. They've got to get through COAG. They've got to get it through the media. There's a lot to get through before we get to that. Yeah, they've gone through privacy and governance. They've gone through those sorts of things. The third component is this higher qualification pathways. So this is, I think, what you're alluding to before, in that, you know, are we just vet or are we vet higher ed or what are we? And so we've got this new tertiary sector where higher ed's coming down, and next year they can open up and they can offer as many places as they like to whomever. And so whose territory do they're going to come be looking after? All right. Some of us live in a competitive world. Anybody from Victoria? Right, that pain is really big at the moment in Victoria. Lots of layoffs and staff and so forth. And so they're trying to push up. They need to get people. You don't get government funding unless you're going up to the next qual. So if you've got your bachelor and you had to do your cert for in TAE, you'll be funding that yourself. So, you know, there's some issues around there. So we're looking at, well, this new tertiary sector, what does it actually mean? And so there's some rationale. The Bradley Review was part of that target I was talking to you about. Lisa Wheelerhans from the University of Melbourne saying, you know, the diploma is actually the main transition point between vet and higher ed. She's also saying getting students into the diploma, to a diploma level, in the first place is actually as important as encouraging them to get up. So this is where the higher qualification thinking is coming around, that small part of the National Vet e-Learning Strategy. So I have money, not literally, I'm not Mr. Bracket on that side, there's $200,000 that we need to give away. Just note, closes 12th of December, which is next Monday. Okay, so speed writing is how it's going to happen. And it was only out for 2 weeks, so it was out for a very short period of time. We've had massive interest in it. If we've got funding past the 30th of June next year, the second stage, so if you get a pilot funded project at up to $30,000 and your pilot seems like it's working really well, you are then, you put in a business case to get another $40,000. So potentially, you've got a 12-month project with $70,000. You can do some really good stuff to really embed what you want to do to move people along that higher qualification pathway. But there's...
Can you just go back to... No, that one. What do you count as a higher pathway?
Do you want to see the models? Is that what you're going to... Oh, sorry, I'm going the wrong way. So these are the models that we're looking at and people need to be interested in, not squeeze themselves into. I've tried to encourage people, don't squeeze yourself into our funding, because what will happen is it won't be a project anybody in your organisation wants to do. And when you come up with all this money and say, now you have to do this, they're going to say, why? And when I say to you, where's all the evidence that I need from you, you're going to say, I don't have any because nobody wants to play. So don't squeeze your ideas into the funding. It's very usually quite easy to see those people who have already been thinking about this or know their industry or pathway area needs to get into this. And this is a bit of funding to help them along the way. So it's very much about that co-delivery. So if you're in a dual sector or you're in an institution that delivers vet and higher ed, and I'll show you how that can happen, where you might have vet and higher ed students in the same sort of courses, that you're supporting that obvious transition vet to higher ed, that you're helping somebody get RPL at a diploma level or above, that's helping them articulate into higher ed. It's very much about a workforce development at diploma above and so forth, disability, disadvantaged, and those that might have a Cert 4 get higher to get to that higher stage. So it's the pathway thing, and very much the linear one as opposed to the crazy paving one that is happening. So it's not, you know, higher ed people trying to get back to vet, basically. And the federal government has actually spent $2 million on a project that was called Integrated Articulation and Credit Transfer. The lead body was the University of Southern Queensland. And they went out and did all this research about, well, why isn't this smooth vet to higher ed pathway happening as well as it should be happening? And so what they've come up with is this 3D focus on articulation pathways. And what they're saying is, not only is it the vet and higher ed who have equal status at the table. Anybody from higher ed or been involved in higher ed? You know, there's sort of a cultural theory that if you do vet and you didn't go to higher ed, you know, it's a bit of a shame, but, you know, maybe one day you'll get there. So there's sort of a status that higher ed's here and vet's here, unwritten one, but, you know, even higher ed don't recognise RPL, don't recognise, you know, that's competency-based and we're criterion-based type stuff, but they're saying, no, this is level playing field for both parties. Both parties must benefit, and you have to have these bodies on the outside that your industry needs to be supporting and helping understand what are these pathways for the industry. Not what's just good for the vet provider, not what's just good for the higher ed provider, and God forbid what's good for the learner sort of thing. And these are just some of the models. And if you just go to this 3darticulation.com.au, it's just been released at the end of October. It's all brand new kind of stuff. This is one model that they've suggested. This is out of their articulation pathways, where they're saying, look, in the first year, and Narelle, this is the kind of thing that you guys are doing, in the first year, you do some vet units, but at the same time, you're doing higher ed units. So you have to have really good partnerships between vet and higher ed for that to happen. That was for And these are models that they're pulling out that are actually happening. They're not sort of theorising, as higher ed's good at doing. They've actually modelling them on what's happening in reality. Another one was I thought might have been interest to people is, you know, if you start as an enrolled nurse and then go on to the bachelor. And so again, you're paralleling, if that's such a word, the vet and higher ed together. So this is the new tertiary space. Part of it is feeding vet into higher ed, like, you know, we're sort of the bedding down sort of process. And, you know, people do really great stuff in terms of foundation skills and help students understand the cultural difference between being in a vet organisation and higher ed. But it's also about working side by side and having higher ed and vet learners in the same environment.
Well, isn't there a third party bringing into the equation would be their industry association.
Sorry.
So that nursing and midwifery boards.
Yes. So that's these guys hanging on. They're the pillars, if you think of them. So they're suggesting that.
Very political.
Yeah, and so they should. That's what why they set themselves up. You know, John was talking about this morning, as an individual employee, you know, you don't have a lot of power, but when you become mass, then, and that's why your professional associations are a number of things, and they should be the voice there. But yeah, look, industry should be involved in there, and as an equal player at the table when you're talking about these things. So these are quite paradigm shifts for organisations. The amount of people says, oh, we deliver a diploma, and I'm like, well, what do your learners do with it? Or they could, I'm like, no, what do they do with it? And how are you helping them get to where they need to go? Now that's when you're going to get our funding. Just by dishing out a diploma is no longer enough, all right? You need to be value-adding what you're doing. Now let's see if I have spoken at the speed of light. So Margaret, how are we going for time? Well, I was hoping we might do this bit, especially considering. Yep, certainly. See you later. Sorry, which diagram was it?
The one that had the model of higher ed. And
this one?
No.
This one?
Right back.
The health
right,
one?
No.
Oh, the coloured vet sector.
Yes,
that one.
Yeah, so just explain to me, with the vocational graduate diploma and the vocational graduate certificate, that doesn't mean that those people have to have a bachelor degree, does it?
No. Don't ask me. This is the AQF.
That's what I'm just asking. Is that?
I think what this is this would be level 5. This would be level 6. Yeah. This would be level 7. This would be level 8.
Because it's interesting in the TAE. There's some new qualifications coming out around the language literacy and numeracy.
Yes.
And it says that it's the vocational graduate certificate, and the pathway is a bachelor degree or a certificate 4.
Yeah.
Don't understand.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm just a bit confused about putting it on scope, because one would assume that if it said a vocational graduate certificate that you had to have a degree, but then it actually says in the qualification that you can also come through and a cert 4.
Yeah. Look, I'm no expert on the new AQF. In fact, you know, I think these are pretty new. In some states, but nationally they're quite new. Some states have had something equivalent to it, but I'm no expert on the AQF. I just know that the funding we've got to give away, it starts here, so this might be where most of your learners are, but how are you helping them move either here or here, or an improved employment outcome is the other sort of
main. So the diploma on the HE side, is that equivalent to the diploma on the VET side?
Yes. They've level. So think of this as level. Look, level 1. So AQF, not the AQTF. So the Australian Qualification Framework. Level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5, level 6, level 7, level 8, level 9, level 10. So that's what the AQF is saying. Is this is
important.
Right. So yes. So the qualifications have those numbers next. Yes. Yes.
And the advanced diploma is a 6. Yes. So on the qualifications, it will have those numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Hang on. It's loud enough.
No.
Oh, God. So whether or not you did your diploma at your response college or you did the diploma at UTS, they're the same.
Yes.
They're recognised the same.
They're recognised the same. Under the AQF, they're not necessarily delivered the same.
No.
And they're not necessarily... The diploma in higher ed might not come out of a training package.
No, so it might...
It would still hold the same weight of...
Yes.
Yes.
As you would...
Under the new AQF.
Yeah, but those lime green ones have a number with them because they're part of the VET system, but... when you get something from higher education, you don't have a number next to it. You just have a diploma in whatever.
Right.
So
my example is I came from a Certificate 4 with work experience and I had to put a portfolio together. I applied to the university to do a Certificate in Communication, stayed long enough to get a Master's. So I've come from a Certificate 4 level in VET.
Yes.
With work experience and a portfolio that gained entrance into uni, and I maintained a credit average and so kept it, just stayed there.
Excuse me, that model that you're talking about is what we'd be interested in funding for that money.
Well,
so,
just happened.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but and just as an example, as a case study, that would be good. Yeah. So what I'd like you to do, just with the people that you're with, or if you want to, you know, spread around and meet some other different people, both these questions, because this is what we need to do, right? This is, I used to call it lifelong learning. Oh, yeah, whatever. Oh, yeah, that's good. But this is what we need to do. This is what Jane Hart's talking about, right? That within the organisation, what are you doing to support your staff or your learners continually develop? Sometimes it's called continuous professional development, CPD. So if you're the health services, that's a term that's used. It's used a lot in New Zealand, in the UK. Lifelong learning, you know, it's... in Europe, funded heavily, here, rhetoric. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to try this new term on people and see if this, I steal most of my stuff. I can't remember who I've stolen off, but how do we actually create a culture of ongoing development within our training environments? And basically, if we do that, then we're supporting this here, which is something we're saying is very bumpy, sometimes out of our control. So just how much time we got, Margaret?
4 o'clock.
It's 4 o'clock now, so if we just spend 5 minutes, just one or two ideas of what either what you are doing, because I don't believe you're empty vessels, or what you could be doing, and then perhaps if we share them and then we all go away with something, including me. Oh, I'm going to use the hand mic. Okay, just wind up what you're talking about now. Okay, you engaged learners, let's bring you back together. So we have to start getting people to think this way. In a competitive environment, you're going to value add what you're giving your learners, therefore you're going to be a lot more attractive to them, so there is a win-win situation for you. What are people doing, or what could we be doing to support learner pathways? So, I don't know, Narelle, if you want to share a little bit about what you're already doing, or...
Okay, I'm involved in a program... I'm at TAFE in Bathurst, and we're running a joint program with Charles Sturt University where they complete the Certificate 4 in tertiary preparation with us, and they do 4 uni subjects at the same time. So they come out with a diploma in general education and the Certificate 4 in tertiary preparation. So that's had a lot of sort of teething problems from the administrative point of view. But overall, we've had really high retention rates, and it's going really well. So next year it should be, you know. No, it'll get them direct entry into uni and up to 4 subjects created into a degree, depending on the course that they do.
Okay. Anybody else got a question in Narelle's project there?
Is that credit transfer to universities across Australia or only into selected ones?
Okay. Some states and territories, like in South Australia now, the TAFE has been mandated to actually work with the universities to create clear and transparent, very obvious pathways for learners that they get credit transfer articulation for. So some of the states are starting to mandate it. Anybody else got... what could we be doing to support learners? Or is anybody else doing a pathway project here?
North Coast, we try and work closely with other universities, so typically Uni of Newcastle, Charles Sturt Uni and Southern Cross Uni are our main people we've done business with. One of the programs for Southern Cross University is Kingscliff Campus, which is near the Gold Coast. We're actually getting our diploma students, and we're teaching that diploma
program with our teachers one day in the university campus. So those diploma students are kind of getting a feel for uni. Often they're first in family. They're often the targeted Bradley people. And it's really effective because people are coming to uni and thinking, oh, I'm in a university. And often it's a mindset thing. Oh, I'm in a uni. And then they're telling me I can get credit for what I'm doing, so I must be doing the work to that standard. So it actually... Oh, I could actually just come here next year, couldn't I? And it seems simple, but it's a really big thing. Yeah, and so we've actually got 40 students there, work for TAFE because we ran out of space for our lab, so it's actually been, and we're not getting it rent-free, so it's worked out well for us as well.
Okay, so there's a few win-wins there in terms of, because one of the things I didn't put up, and I debated about it or not, the unis do have... is it 29% or something? They have to have 29% people they're calling low SES, disadvantaged, disengaged, disenfranchised. I'm not sure. I think they were going to go by postcodes as to whether or not you fit it into there. So it's very hard to box people. But it seemed...
That's right. That's an approach that can have problems.
So here you've got, it sounded like you've got a small taste of university, and that's actually building some self-efficacy.
Yeah. And I should also say that program, depending on whether they get a diploma, they're getting at least 12 months credit. Oh. We're actually, if they get a credit, they go and do the advanced diploma, they can actually get 2 years credit.
Okay.
They've got to get a distinction, but they can actually get 2 years credit. Now, that's really cost-effective for the student.
And we were speaking this morning, I was speaking with Narelle about her project this morning. You're actually doing a lot of hard work for prepping these guys to get into higher ed. So you're actually doing higher ed a big favour here. One is that target, which they all have to be part of. You're doing them big. But what I also heard was that you were using their space. Yes. So there was a big win for you in that you've got increased infrastructure that you're not even paying for.
That's right, yeah, it's been good. And yeah, you're definitely right about that. That's one of the reasons they don't actually, it's not the, when you talk to the actual lecturers, it's the pre-preparation that we're doing for those students. A very low dropout rate. It's a really big win. It really, imagine what it does for their scores. Suddenly they're not getting, because they were getting a big dropout rate. With ours, they get, it's like probably 80, 90% get through, whereas some of their other, like they're only getting a third through if they took them from school. It was a big, big jump up for them.
So you're saving them a lot of money in terms of support services and also helping them keep their money, because we were talking this morning, if they drop out in the first year, they're missing out on the income they would get from the second and third and fourth year. Yeah. So you're helping keeping them retain their income as well.
Are the university staff delivering the uni component? Or are the TAFE staff delivering
it? This is still when they're doing the TAFE. We've got two things going. So we're going to do the SCU... So down at Coffs Harbour, we're going to do the SCU College, where we're going to do dual enrolments with a associate bachelor's degree. But the one I've just described in Kingscliff, we're still just doing the TAFE. So we're going doing the TAFE qualification. We let the university guys come in and say, hey, guys, when you get through this, this is all the credit you can get. Isn't that fantastic? And... but we're actually just delivering the TAFE qualification, so we're just getting this rent-free premises that we needed, because we got a lot of, it came out of PPP funding. We were very successful in getting lots of PPP places. We got the students, and we kind of ran out of room, and this came along just at the right time.
But they've been culturalised, if that's the term, assimilated into this environment that perhaps, especially if they're first to family, they don't even have a picture. In fact, I heard a presentation by one of the ladies from Deakin University, and the language they use, like, I want you to write a paper about, and so this person literally did that. They hand wrote a paper, and when the paper was handed up as handwritten, they said, well, what did you do that for? But the writing said, write a paper. So just if you've never had anything to contextualise what you're going to be doing, how do you know what they really want from you? Okay, one more, what we can and what we could be doing, because obviously we've got some two really good, we are doing some really great stuff. Is there anything else you'd like to see happening around the traps?
I was getting some information from Derek?
Yeah.
Yep. Because I'm at the other end of the spectrum with care workers in the disability sector, and some of them have come through on the EB PPP funding to do certificate 3 and 4 in disability, and I'd like to engage them on this ongoing development And I've always been very big at spelling out what next. So there is a pathway, and I've shared my own story from coming from certificate up to a higher ed.
Yep.
And so Derek was suggesting, you know, setting up a wiki or blogging so that I can engage that community, and we can start chatting about, I don't know, what they've learned, or even cementing the learning. So it wasn't just a book learning exercise. It was very practical based, but it was still, you know, it could be still part of their old history of learning. But it's this ongoing learning I want to engage in. So
it's really it's a support mechanism that we have. Yeah. We have, depending on what our networks are and what we're doing and how clever we are at using our networks.
Well, they're out in the field, and you've never seen them.
No, but they would. So they would.
We want to bring them back.
Yeah. And look, if they get them, there's a system called. They all in the same organisation.
Yeah.
So they have the same email address.
But they don't necessarily see. No, they're not even on our
database. Right. Because there's a system. I mean, you could do it in a Facebook group. What you want to do is that what they're more than likely going to have is one of these things.
Yes, they are. Right. That's what I'm saying, Derek. They've got that.
Oh, get them to be
not necessarily computer literate, but they've all got these later mobile phones.
Right.
And the latest mobile phone.
And if they can go directly onto Facebook in the group, they can be adding and asking questions and sharing and posting pictures. Well, it's just one suggestion.
It's one, yeah.
One suggestion, yeah. Or just SMS, have a group SMS.
But what's different to,
might need to wind up in a
wiki to Facebook?
Look at their technical stuff that we don't have time to go into now.
What would be an easier user-friendly? Look,
if they've got web Facebook access, either would be
can I make
fine.
One comment? One of the workshops this morning was. Lahood was her last name. I've forgotten her first name. And she a young woman, she's in your program.
Oh, yes. That lady, yes. The mobile lady.
Yes.
Yes.
Now,
the Institute,
my suggestion is that you have a look at the program and get in contact with her, because she's got 1,000 ideas of the sort of thing that you were talking about. And as Narelle just said, a group on Facebook allows you to have the group, keep all your own Facebook stuff private, and there's that opportunity.
And do you have adult children?
The other thing that Lonnie didn't talk about was that a lot of her workforce are from non-English speaking background, so that also then brings in some LLN stuff around that. But it's also another good learning opportunity for them to actually get together, and maybe we can look at that in the training. We could add it in,
right? And just let me add, Melanie Dorian, who's facilitated today, is your e-learning, your local e-learning broker person, Melanie. That the beautiful Melanie with the dark hair, Melanie Dorian. She's your local. There's my family looking for me. She's your local contact person. Start, ring her or give her an email. Set up a time, have a conversation, and start small about what.
Oh, idea.
Yeah, about how. What is a wiki? Or should I be using a wiki versus Facebook users trigger? But I'll just wipe out that. That was excellent. That's really helped me in terms of the work, because this is a new area for me, as well as the national e-learning. National Vet e-learning strategy, and I've got a big passion around there, so I'm interested in working with people around that space, even if it's not the money to give you. If we can work in other ways, that would be great too. So if I just do that, or I've got a business card if anybody would like one of them. So thank you for helping me, Margaret.
And thank you, Alison, for a great talk. It was fun.